Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and with the deadline of midnight tonight for most uninsured people to start signing up for Obamacare, and with the media obsessing about whether the program is succeeding or failing to attract the necessary folks, it turns out reality is very different state by state, even right here in the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area. Joining me now to talk about the disparity in how Obamacare enrollment has gone is Sarah Cliff, who is now senior editor at Vox, the soon-to-be-launched news site started by Ezra Klein, also formerly of The Washington Post. We'll also give you some last-minute advice, too, if you need it. Sarah, welcome back to WNYC. I think you're our first Vox guest.
Oh, that's exciting. Glad to have the distinction.
And listeners, if you're one of those uninsured people required to get in the system by today, and you just decided in the last week whether to sign up or take your chances with a tax penalty, call in and tell us about your decision. Obamacare, yes, or Obamacare, no, especially if you're young and healthy and uninsured. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Help us report this story with your story, 212-433-9692. And if anyone has last-minute questions about starting or finishing the process today, we can try to answer those, too. 212-433-WNYC. Remember, you only have to start the process online today in most places in order to avoid a penalty. You have to finish it by April 15th, but just start it by today. So, Sarah, we happen to have state-by-state comparisons right here in our listening area with New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. One estimate we saw put New Jersey in the bottom 10 states in terms of fulfilling enrollment goals. But then there's Connecticut, where the exchange is going so well that other states are adopting their system. Let's start in New Jersey, where Governor Christie has said that Obamacare is a failed system, and he opted to make everybody use the federal site instead of establishing a state one. How's New Jersey doing on enrollments?
So we know about 74,000 people have signed up for plans in New Jersey, and that's about 42% of what the expectation was for New Jersey specific enrollment, if you kind of break down national enrollment numbers. So you're right. They're one of the states that are not getting especially robust enrollment numbers.
Pathetic. 42% of goal.
Yeah, and I think it really, you know, underscores the difference between healthcare.gov and the exchanges being run by the states, that the state-run exchanges are doing a lot more outreach. They have a lot more budget for outreach, and they're really getting people signed up. If you look at, you know, New York and Connecticut, I think are both considered success stories, and I think both of them have already exceeded the number of people they were expected to enroll this year. I just saw something that New York has already, you know, gotten 122% of expected sign-ups, and Connecticut, like you said, is doing so well that other states essentially want to buy the software they built and just use that instead of what they're using.
So is this just about state exchanges versus healthcare.gov? Do the other states, mostly with Republican governors who decided not to, you know, play the game, and using healthcare.gov, the national website, are they also seeing like 42% of goal?
Varies a little bit. Generally, we do know the state-based exchanges are doing better than healthcare.gov, that they are seeing more robust enrollment numbers. There are a few exceptions to the rule. For example, Maryland, down here near D.C., has had a really rough launch, and they're actually one of the states that has decided to scrap their exchange at the end of this enrollment and buy Connecticut software. So it's not, you know, it's not true in every state, but generally, you do see healthcare.gov states getting a lot less enrollment than the state runs exchanges.
So let's take a New Jersey call. Here's Andrea in Rockaway, New Jersey. Andrea, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling us.
Thank you. So my story is I actually live in New York, and I signed up for Obamacare. I did the whole thing. And I was going to pay for the highest plan because last year I had to pay out of pocket. I had some things that I just wanted to check up on. And after doing all the math, I wasn't going to meet any deductible for a lower plan. So I was all ready to sign up for the premium plan. It ended up being cheaper, you know, at the end of the year. But then, unfortunately, I lost my job. So I decided to kind of postpone on the whole thing. Another kind of thing that went into it, I started my own business, so I couldn't even get unemployment. So now I'm just at a point where I'm hoping in the next couple of months, you know, more money comes in or business does well. And then in October, I can sign up for a plan again.
Sorry, first of all, for calling you a Jersey girl when you're a New Yorker.
No, I'm Jersey by heart. I grew up in Jersey.
Okay. So I got bad information there. But if you are unemployed, then have you looked at whether you might qualify either for a very big subsidy on a plan or even for Medicaid, eligibility for which is greatly expanded under Obamacare?
I haven't looked into that specifically because I did all the paperwork and everything before, and then the deadlines were a little confusing. Honestly, I thought I was, you know, only able to pick a plan by the end of March.
Uh-huh.
And then this kind of all happened at the end of the month.
Right. So you could, make up your own mind, but you could, it seems to me, Sarah Cliff from Vox, correct me if I'm wrong, start again or continue with her application and, you know, tweak what her originally reported income was and see what might be available to her for a heavily subsidized private sector plan or for Medicaid eligibility on the Obamacare, the New York site, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, you can do that with this extension through mid-April. So since you're someone who has started an application, you could go back, put in your expected income. If, if you don't want to go back into the website, there's a great calculator that the Kaiser Family Foundation has created. If you just search Kaiser Subsidy Calculator, they will show you what programs you qualify for if you're looking for something a little bit faster than going back into the website. And, you know, generally the cutoff, if you're an individual, the cutoff for Medicaid is about $15,000 a year. That's kind of, a rough estimate. So, you know, I definitely suggest taking a second look at it since it seems like your options have changed.
Andrew, may I ask your age?
I am 27.
So the policy should be relatively cheap, too, at that age. So that might help you if you go take another look and then with the subsidies. But you'll see. Anyway, good luck with it. Thank you for telling us your story.
Thank you.
And Teresa in Bedminster. That is in New Jersey, isn't it, Teresa?
Yes, it is.
Hi.
Hi, how you doing? Well, I, as you can tell, I'm English, so I think this whole self-care thing over here is nuts. Because if you get sick in England, you go to the doctor and you don't have to worry about how you're going to pay for this. But in any case, I don't have health insurance. I've been in America. I emigrated here 35 years ago. So I decided when I voted for Obama, yay, I'm going to get health insurance. I tried to sign up for it. The cheapest policy I can get is $850 a month. With a $2,000 deductible, it's just catastrophic debt, the cheapest, lowest tier. And I only make $47,000 a year. I can't afford to pay that.
May I ask your age or decade?
I'm 62.
Aha. Uh-huh. So another few years and you'll be able to go on Medicare. But for the moment, somebody at 62 really wants to be covered with health insurance. And yet you're saying, with the subsidies available to you, with your income, with what the premium is for somebody your age, even for the most bare bones package, you can't handle it.
I can't. No, I just with my mortgage, and I'm in small business. I'm a small business owner. I got absolutely nailed when this whole crash happened with the economy. I mean, I'm hanging by my teeth. I'm hanging to hold on to my home, and it's crazy. And that's with a $2,000 deductible, and just nothing. No doctor's visits. Nothing. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I'm pretty healthy.
Let me ask Sarah Cliff to see if we can get you a better deal somehow. Sarah, if I'm understanding her numbers, and Teresa, correct me if I'm wrong, she makes about $47,000 a year is what you said?
Correct,
and
yes.
The policy would cost $850 a month or around $10,000 a year. So that's more than 20% of your income. Isn't there a limit on what people can be required to spend on health insurance under the Obamacare Act, Sarah, that would get her a lower price?
Not exactly. So what there is in the healthcare law is an exemption from the individual mandate for people who can't find policies that are below, I believe it's about 9.5%. This is definitely above the threshold.
Yeah.
But if you can't find a policy for less than 9.5% of your income, you will not be required to pay the penalty for not carrying insurance.
Uh-huh.
So it doesn't lower your premium.
So at least Teresa will not be subject to the tax penalty for not having insurance.
Yes. I will say, though, the 800 rate, you know, and I think, you know, Teresa's in one of the most difficult situations. She's just above the cutoff for subsidies, which is about $45,000 income. You know, being older, premiums also get more expensive. Those rates do sound especially high for the bronze level plan, so it might be worth, while open enrollment is still open, just taking one more check to make sure, you know, those are definitely the cheapest rates.
Well, that was the cheapest. So there was a silver plan. That was $1,200. I mean, $1,200 is crazy.
Every month. Teresa, good luck out there. I hope he helped a little bit. At least if you take another look, maybe you'll find something. If not, at least it sounds like you won't have to pay the tax penalty. Also on cost, we had a caller last week who I want to replay a little bit of, Kylie in Bed-Stuy, who was concerned about payment after she signs up. Here's a clip.
I understand that so I'll be billed monthly, and if I don't pay that bill, I think two consecutive months, then the insurance company can drop me and drop my coverage. So if that were to happen, because it is a really hefty payment, to be perfectly honest, if that were to happen so that by the end of 2014, I no longer have health insurance coverage, could I end up with both a tax penalty from the government and a medical bill?
Wow. So what would it mean if there are many people like Kylie, Sarah, who might not be able to afford the monthly payments for coverage once they do sign up? I mean, there's already some expectation that premiums are going to have to rise starting next year.
Right. So the way the individual mandate works is it does allow for a small gap in coverage. You only get penalized if you go three consecutive months without health insurance. Let's say you miss your payment 1 month. You're not, you know, necessarily going to be dropped. You're not going to be fined the individual mandate. You have to make it to that three-month threshold. And then you could end up in a situation if you don't pay your insurance premiums, you're not considered covered by the insurance company. And, you know, if you go uninsured for more than 3 months, you would pay the penalty. But I would just emphasize there's a little bit of that wiggle room that's not going to be if you are uninsured for just 1 day that all of a sudden you're paying the individual mandate fine.
Jonathan in Metuchen, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I decided to opt out for very similar reasons based on the fact that I don't make enough money to be able to afford even the minimum and still be able to do the things that I need to do. I'm trying to buy a house and my car insurance, all the other things I have to pay for. I mean, do I end up in the end with no money and I have nothing? Now, in the end, it's cheaper for me now as I'm 34, I'm healthy, and the tax penalty is cheaper than my insurance, so I'm willing to take the risk for this year. I don't know what I'm going to do next year, but, you know, that's where I'm at.
I'm curious if you shopped the same bare-bones catastrophic coverage that our last caller did and whether you know what you would be charged per month for it.
I believe it's about $260 a month. My number might be off a little bit, but it's like $2-something. And, you know, in the end, I guess that for how much money I'm making, it's, I guess, 1% of your salary. And that's cheaper than what I would end up paying for health insurance.
The penalty will be 1% of your income. But if your premium price would be that low, then you would get your policy for only about $3,000 a year. That's make or break for you?
At this point, yeah. I mean, I don't make that much money. You know, so I'm trying to budget out how to, do I not buy a house now? And then, you know, I'm just at that point in my life where that's what I want to do.
Right.
And this is kind of a breaking point I'm going to have to pay either $3,000 or let's say it ends up being $1,500 at the end of the year. And I now have to take that risk without having health insurance. I haven't had it for, you know, almost 10 years now. So.
Was that number, I'm curious, that $250 a month, was that after a subsidy? Were you qualified for a subsidy and that was after a subsidy?
No, I missed the subsidy by
just missed
very minimal. just like it's like a, you know, a few dollars that I miss it by.
So you also make then just a little over $45,000 a year?
Just under 45.
Uh-huh. But you still missed it.
Yeah.
All right. So you're going to take your chances out there.
I guess so. You know, and what I'm also curious about is what the penalties that we're going to have to pay. Where does that money go to?
It goes to the United States Treasury, Sarah, doesn't it?
It does, yes. You know, I don't think it's earmarked for any specific purpose. I don't know if it funds a specific thing, but it does go to the Treasury, and, you know, it is collected. It's taken out of any tax return that you might have is how they recoup the penalty.
Jonathan, good luck. I want to ask you a question comparing Jonathan's stated price to the previous caller's stated price, the 34-year-old compared to the 62-year-old. Does the sliding scale by age go up that much that for somebody 34 years old it would be $250 a month, for somebody 62 it would be $850 a month? I mean, who knows if they're looking at apples and apples here. But does that
right.
sound about right to you? Because it does go up with age, even though pre-existing
does,
conditions
yeah.
don't affect your rate. Is it that much?
Yeah, you know, the scale that's allowed in the Affordable Care Act, insurance companies can charge the oldest subscribers three times as much as their youngest. And actually, these two callers almost hit that on the head, where
yeah.
you have one person looking at about $260 and one looking at $850. So this is the type of variation that's allowed in the healthcare law, and it's meant to reflect partially the different healthcare costs that different demographics tend to have. And this is, you know, it's smaller variation than what was allowed before the Affordable Care Act, but, you know, older people are going to face higher premiums, and, you know, the variation can be as much as three times as much as someone buying the exact same policy who happens to be in their 20s.
Before you go, I read that Connecticut is not extending its enrollment deadline past today. In other words, with what the president announced last week, as long as people start the process of signing up for insurance today, then they meet this March 31st deadline, as long as they complete the process by April 15th. But I read that that's not the case on Connecticut's state exchange. You actually have to finish it today. Do you know if that's true?
You know, I haven't checked into that, Connecticut specifically. I do know that states that are running exchanges, of which Connecticut is one of them, do get to decide whether to extend. And since Connecticut has been one of the better-run states, they didn't have the type of problems that healthcare.gov did in the fall, that they might have decided, you know what, we've given people more than enough time. We're confident the system will work on today, and we're not going to extend. So I think it's important for people, especially living in Connecticut and New York, to look at the deadlines that their state-based exchanges have set.
And we know that there is a big rush over the weekend, and I'm sure it's continuing right now, to the various healthcare.gov portals from states that are using the federal government and the state portals from states that are using their own. And they may exceed the total target number that the federal government, the Obama administration, set in the first place. But when do you think we'll know if the demographics worked out, if they got the right kind of age mix to make the system, you know, start off on a solid financial footing?
Mm-hmm. So every month, HHS does put out a report of enrollment in the exchanges, and that does include a breakdown by age. I think the more important thing, though, will be to look at what premiums look like next year, because it really what really matters is how insurance companies think they did in terms of the people signing up and whether they feel like they need to raise their premiums to cover the healthcare costs of whoever picked their plan. So I think it's when we start seeing premiums come out next fall, that's when we'll know, did insurance companies price accurately, or did they get, you know, a worse mix, a less healthy mix of people, and have to raise their premiums as a result?
And I'll also want to see politically if the success rates really do turn out to be so much higher in states like New York and Connecticut that have state exchanges, which will help keep the premiums low next year, then in states where the governors decided not to participate and the healthcare.gov site states have much lower participation rates and therefore higher premiums, whether political pressure will then ratchet up on those Republican governors to set up their own exchanges, and whether that'll start, you know, within their states. And we just have 10 seconds for you to have a last thought on that.
You know, it's a lot of work, is all I'd say. They learned that from healthcare.gov, so I think they're going to be cautious in approaching setting up exchanges next year.
Sarah Cliff, healthcare reporter for the new Vox.com, senior editor at Vox.com. Thank you very much, Sarah.
Thank you.
By the way, the Connecticut Post, here's that line I was referring to. Connecticut Post, representatives of Connecticut's exchange have stated that Access Health Connecticut will offer no such extension. So Connecticut listeners, that applies to you if you start, seems like you have to finish by tonight.